Hello, and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's show, we are going to focus on the more personal aspects of achievement and what I like to call the proper care and feeding of our souls, spirits, and self. My guest today is Jean Costa. Jean has a wonderful blog called Creating Positive Affirmations, and that is a blog based on her new book about intentional living. Jean, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
So I understand you have an MSW in social work.
I do.
From UNC Chapel Hill, and you've been practicing yoga for 35 years. Tell us a little bit about that before we really get started.
I went to my first yoga class when I lived in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay.
And I had a YMCA right up the corner from us, and they had a lodge, and the lodge had a glass ceiling. And I went into the class. It must have been dusk. And when we finished the class an hour later, it was dark. And we were told to lie down in what they call corpse pose.
Right.
Which is savasana. And I laid down and looked up. And through the glass, I could see all the stars.
Wow.
And I thought, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to do forever.
So you found that place that centered you and made you aware of everything around you.
And I love the movement. I loved telling the body what it was supposed to do and then guiding it into that position.
Well, yoga is very much about being centered, about the physical and the spiritual, your mind and everything working together, isn't it?
Yes. Do you practice?
I have in the past.
Okay. Well, the yoga is the Sanskrit word for union.
Okay.
And it's about bringing the mind and the body together. And I like to say it's about bringing the mind, the body, and the spirit together, all three. And so there are several different tools that you can use, but the main tool, the focus, is usually on the breath. And so as long as you can focus on your breath, even if you take 5 minutes, it can be so powerful just to focus on the inhale and the exhale.
Right.
All of a sudden, your blood pressure will drop. Your body will relax. You can feel better in just a few minutes, especially if you practice on a regular basis.
Well, and it's breath is life.
Breath is life.
Right. God breathed life into us in the beginning, and that's where we stay connected with everything. But I know when I get tense, I hold my breath.
Flight or fight.
Right. And it's like, it can be a pain response. It can be anything. And I know that's one of the most challenging things I've had in yoga or Pilates. I've done a lot of Pilates, is that breathing and that connecting and shutting everything out. So when you're focused on that, you're really focusing on getting back to yourself.
That's true. And don't you think that anything you do that takes all of your attention. I was a tennis player for a mm-hmm. long time. I loved playing tennis because as soon as I let my mind go to lunch
right.
or to the grocery store, I missed the ball. So unless I focused on that little ball coming at me
right.
100%. So for me, it was like a meditative experience. It was the zen of tennis.
Well, and anything, it makes your body align, your health align, gets you centered in feeling your emotions or dealing with the stress. That makes you better for everything else you have to do.
Well, and the other part I love about yoga is that you take the lessons that you learn on the mat.
Right.
And you take those with you out into your life. So on the mat, you're learning to be flexible.
Okay.
You're learning to balance.
Right.
I can't think of what yes. else, but there's all these.
Right.
And these are the qualities that, well, you're learning to be present.
Right.
And it's challenging. I mean, there will certainly be asanas or poses that you can do that don't present that
right.
much challenge. But it's good if you go into a pose that maybe you're a little afraid of.
Okay.
Whatever it right. happens to be. You're thinking, oh, I can't really do this. But you're willing to give it a try. And isn't that exactly what, you know, you want to do in your life?
Right, because it's pushing those boundaries. It's knowing who you are. It's knowing, and that, like you said, keeping your eye on the ball, playing tennis, or getting in a position or remembering that breath helps us understand what our intent is.
Yes. It takes you out of yourself. It takes you into the bigger world. And yet it keeps you centered at the same time. If you talk to people that really practice yoga.
Right.
So I'm not talking about just physical exercise, but follow the breath.
Right.
And are very aware of everything that you're learning while you're doing the practice. They'll tell you that it's life changing. And I've had people ask me how that fits in with my faith.
Right.
And I think it has enhanced my faith.
Right, because a lot of people are intimidated by yoga because they think of the non-God-oriented type faith.
Or the multi-God-oriented faith.
Well, the one true, you know, from my background, the one true God. So when we think about that, that does intimidate people about getting it and wanting to not mix the two.
Yeah, sometimes they're afraid that they'll get caught up in the theology of it, but it's not really so much theology as it is philosophy. Mm-hmm. And it's about the philosophy of all those qualities that I talked about balance and flexibility and being centered and being grounded.
And being quiet, you know, to hear, to listen, to see what God's saying.
Wow.
Right.
And isn't that something that's really hard in this day and age?
Yes.
Well, to be quiet.
Because we're pulled with our electronics, we're pulled with our schedules, we're pulled with home stuff, work stuff, play stuff. And so we're pulled in all these different directions. And we let the things and the activities pull us, which what you're talking about with yoga and then with your book, what you're talking about is letting us guide our lives and not letting everything else pull us this way and that. We make conscious choices.
We make conscious choices. Yes. We live life rather than life living us.
Well, in your book, you talk about surviving breast cancer, about all the things that, and that's how this evolved, your blog inspiring this, you're doing the yoga retreats. But throughout your book, you talk about that lifelong practice of enjoying the private moments, the important moments, the little moments, and making those choices. How did your yoga practice and that blog and surviving cancer, how did all that come to form this book and materialize into those the wonderful words you've written?
Let me see. That's quite a question. I think I have always been interested in the workings of the mind.
Okay.
And I've always been fascinated by religion.
Okay.
Just fascinated. I was thinking as a young person when I went to college, mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of guidance, especially for women.
Right.
And looking back on it, if I had had the opportunity to study whatever I wanted, I probably would have gone into psychology, you know, at a very young age, or maybe divinity school or something like that. Of course, I'm a Catholic, so there's not a lot of room for women that want to study, but there are certain avenues of being of help to other people along those lines too. So I think that's probably why I went back to school as an older adult and did the MSW because my focus was in mental health.
Okay.
So I've always been interested in that.
You've been writing this journal, your blog, and sharing with the world all these wonderful insights and stories and to see it all together in a book, but it's your life, blog by blog and choice by choice, that you share.
It is my life. I didn't start off wanting to share my life.
Right.
But what I found was that I'm in a discussion group, mm-hmm. and I've done Artist's Way workshops.
Okay.
I facilitate Artist's Way workshops over the years. In fact, I just finished one for the OLLI program for NC State.
Okay.
They called it Encore. Now they're part of the OLLI
And the Ollie is?
Ollie, you know, I don't know exactly what that stands for, but Duke has the Ollie program.
Okay.
And NC State is now part of that. And it's an adult education program. And so I probably facilitated my first Artist Way workshop back like in 1995.
Okay.
A friend had introduced me to Julia Cameron's book, The Artist Way. And she has two main principles in her book, which is journaling every day, 3 pages, and taking an artist date once a week. I'm not too good at the artist date, but I've always journaled.
Okay.
I mean, ever since I was a little tiny girl. And having this ritual of morning pages is what she calls it, and writing 3 pages every day. And for me, it was an extremely powerful experience. It's my quiet time.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to reflect. It's time to get rid of all the junk that's in my head. It sort of focuses me for the day. I can see what needs to be done and what I want to do and what makes me feel good and what I struggle with. I mean, everything is right there. And yet, after 3 pages... I close the book.
Okay, so
it's
you limit it to that 3 pages.
So I'm in a discussion group with a wonderful group of women. We've been friends for decades, but we started the discussion group about 7 years ago, I guess. And one of the other women also facilitates Artist Way workshop, and she always focused on the affirmations. And Julia Cameron has a whole list of affirmations in her book. And I never really focused on those. And my friend, her name's Jean Scholes, she said that writing out those affirmations was more powerful than any therapy she had ever used in her life. And so she kept encouraging me, Jean, take this on. Put this in your journals.
Right.
Do this. She said some mornings she has an affirmation and she just writes the affirmation for 3 pages.
Okay.
She writes that same thing, whatever it is. She's trying to... reframe her life so that it works the way she wants it to work.
Changing the conversation in her head by writing that affirmation
over and over. And so I thought to myself, okay, if Jean says this is what I'm supposed to do, and she would encourage all of us. So I started it, and it was like a switch had turned on, because I'd always been a very positive person, but to be conscious about all of my choices and all of my words and all of my thoughts, and to refocus them the way I wanted them to go, to refocus my life. Then I realized I was refocusing my whole life the way I wanted it to be. And I could do that by writing out these affirmations. And after I got started, my goal for the blog was just to share this power with other people. I know it's been out there before. Norman Vincent Peale, Joel Osteen, Robert Schuller. I mean, they all, you know, positive
psychology. But everybody has a different voice and a different way of connecting.
Right.
And your background, your experiences, your life that you share makes that connection for a lot more people. Your blog's very popular.
It has been well received.
Yes, it has.
And I was waiting at one point, because I did put myself out there. Takes a certain amount of audacity.
Yes.
And that's okay. And I kept waiting like for the attack to come. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I know. Every time I published an article, I was like, okay, who's going to criticize it? Who's going to argue with it? Who's going to take it on? Because it's not a world that typically embraces something from a different perspective or someone that's doing well. Unfortunately, our world's not set up to celebrate everyone's successes and share that information typically.
Well, and I think, too, that many of my affirmations revolve around my faith.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly it's not real popular in all parts of the world to have a strong sense of faith. Some people I figured somebody would be offended, but that's just who I am.
Right.
So it seemed important for me to share it.
Well, the authenticity your faith coming through and your perspective. It's not, you're not pushing it on anyone. It's just you, and this is here. Take it or leave it, right?
Yeah, I agree. I always feel like I don't feel like I'm an evangelist, although I know we're supposed to evangelize. I always think it's our lives that...
Right. That's the best testimony.
That the best testimony. Or was it... I remember... It wasn't St. Francis, but it was the one who says, your life may be the only Bible some people ever read.
Right.
So I don't know exactly who says it, but I would hope that I'm doing my best, and that's the way it'll be. But my faith journey is also so exciting, and it's all part of this. It's all coming together.
Right.
And so I like to share that too, because for me, my faith gives me a sense of hope, and it brings me compassion and gratitude and all the positive words that I just love those words. And so many times I see people struggling, and I just think, if they could have this gift, the gift of maybe self-discovery or self-control or self-direction, and this gift, and incorporate their faith, don't you think it's so powerful to believe that there is a world beyond ours, and that there's a personal God that really cares about us? It doesn't mean that bad things aren't going to happen to us, but I really believe that if I can stay in touch with the divine, that whatever happens to me, it'll be okay.
Right.
That I'll be able to deal with it, and that maybe even I can turn it into something that's really wonderful. You know, like the breast cancer experience.
Right.
Certainly, when you get hit with a cancer diagnosis, I'm sure it's not unlike any other serious life illness. I always feel like it's like a terrorist bomb going off.
Mm-hmm.
You're walking down the street, it's a pretty day, or you're sitting at the coffee shop having coffee or whatever, you know, and then boom, you know, your whole life gets turned upside down. And it was hard. It was hard going through that. It was surgery, it was chemo, it was radiation, it was exhaustion. And yet, looking back on it, there were just so many blessings that have come out of it. And I talked to a lot of people that are cancer, either patients or survivors, or like some of them like to say thrivers. And I always tell them there are blessings in everything that happens in our life if we choose to look for them.
Right. You have a quote in your book. It says, creating positive affirmations is about planning your life. It's about how to make conscious choices about how you want to live life, what you want to change, what you want to improve upon, and what you value and want to fully appreciate. So we've been talking about that willingness to look at things and not see just the negative aspect of it's cancer, but making it be a blessing in the midst of all the trials, the tribulations, holding on to your family, setting your priorities, all those kind of things. You talk also in the book about a novel that you read that had a character that said, relish the new day and wait at first. You remember that quote in the book that I'm referring to?
No, what was the novel?
It says, you quoted it in the earliness as a character in a novel, and you didn't give the name of the novel that I recall. Excuse me. And it talks about, you know, relishing the new day and waiting on that new day and changing your perspective, basically, on how the new day brings it to you. And it's how can you find the joy in each new day?
Oh, and it wasn't the joy of appreciative living?
It may be. I didn't actually note down the title of the book, and
yeah,
I should have.
It might have been. Right. That was part of my study group. We choose a different book all the time. And we've had some really great books and some that were just okay. And what I took from The Joy of Appreciative Living, which is also, I believe she ran a workshop up at Duke.
Okay.
and I don't remember her name. I should, but I think she's local. And the workshop was very expensive. And so I said to my study group, hey,
get the book. We all like the books.
Let's get this book and we can do our own study group. But I like that practice because she, now I know a lot of people have gratitude journals, but this is just a little bit different because what she has you do is she has you look at the day before and find three things that brought you joy.
Yeah. You know? Okay, that's what we're talking
and
about.
And I love that because, and I've talked to friends that do this too, because all of a sudden what happens is you're going, or I should speak for myself, I'm going through my day and something will make me smile, like now being here with you. And I'll think to myself, oh, I have to write this down for tomorrow. So it makes it even more joyful. It makes me aware.
It makes you conscious of it, taking note. And then I know I read it in your book. And so at night when I lay down in bed, it's like, okay, what three things are my joys out of the day? You know, is it the cat doing something funny? Is it the neighbor doing something nice? Is it time with my family? What is that thing that I can celebrate? A new client, a new project going successfully. Whatever that one thing is.
What thing made you smile?
Right.
What, you know, what thing lightened your heart? You know, just even if, you know, it could be, I could be walking along, I mean, the spring in North Carolina, it's like a fairyland out there. I mean, between the flowering fruit trees and the azaleas. And I mean, I can walk outside to take a walk and I just take a deep breath and think, not too deep though. But a deep breath and think, my gosh, you know, this is better than anything you could imagine. It just feels so wonderful and it feels good in your body. I mean, that's the yoga, right?
Right.
I mean, you take this thing that brings you joy and then you recognize that your muscles have relaxed, your face is relaxed, maybe your head doesn't hurt as much as it might have.
Right.
You know, you're not in that fight or flight or fight stage any longer. You're just present to this wonderful feeling that you're having. And there's so many of them, Lee, and so many people miss them.
Well, we're on automatic pilot. We get in the car, drive to work the same way every day. I try to make myself drive to the radio station differently every week.
Oh, good for you.
So that... And I know, and you look down and you think, you see a grand old tree or something, and it's just, you know, and it's like, that tree was there last week or 2 weeks ago, right? But yet, it's whether it's the time of day, the way the light is, the weather, something, you notice that tree, and you can appreciate that new image in your mind. You think, how did I drive by that every day for a month? Or, you know, or you drive yourself home and you don't realize, and you get home and you think, oh, how did I get here, right? Because you're just processing so much in your mind.
Or you're driving home and you wind up someplace else.
Yeah. I have to admit, I there for a long time before I settled here in North Carolina again. I moved, average moving about every 8 months. I lived in 11 states in 10 years. And I would think, well, I need to go get something. It's at that store. And I'd have to stop and think, is that store even in this town? You know, it's like, and it gets to that point that you're on automatic pilot, but when you do take a moment, you realize you haven't even been aware of your life in those moments that you're talking about. And those choices, we just automatically do something rather than make a conscious choice. And we run from things rather than making decisions to go toward things.
Oh, that's very well put. Yes, you're right. And the other thing about focusing on the joys is... the assisted living facility that I visit on a regular basis, I was sharing with them, you know, that they should try this practice. And the one gentleman there said to me, you do that every day? And I said, yeah, every day I sit down and I try to remember the day from before and what things brought me joy. The really cool journal entries are when I keep writing and writing and writing, and I think, oh, that's so many more than three, but that's okay, you know, and I have a whole list. But he said, that'll help your memory, too, he said. You probably won't have Alzheimer's. And I thought, well, I hope he's right.
Well, isn't it the joy in our lives, that awareness that, you know, even, heaven forbid, we end up with Alzheimer's, the fact that we lived every moment of our life up to that point. That makes a difference in how our family can view a tragedy like that or a challenge like that. If we've spent that time, we've had the right priorities, that right balance, that right intent in living our lives.
When my dad died, which was many years ago, I remember standing in the funeral parlor and looking down at him in the casket, and my first thought was, and he died young, he was 62 years old, but I said to myself, wow, Dad, you've had a great life. You've had so much fun.
Right.
He just embraced everything that he did, and I thought to myself, that was probably, for me, one of those life-changing moments where I looked down and I thought, when I go, I hope somebody's looking down at me and saying the same thing, you know.
Well, we get caught up in running our businesses and our corporate lives. And I remember being at a major corporation that shall remain nameless and someone worrying about, you know, how pretty the document was or something. And I said, I don't think St. Peter is going to ask me at the gate if that Excel spreadsheet was pretty. You know, did I live a good life? Was it put together well? Those kind of things. But was it pretty was not a concern. I said, it's not going to get me in or keep me out of heaven. And that perspective, right, was not something that they had even heard in the corporate world, I must say. And so different priorities, different perspectives make us better at what we do, make us more engaged, and make us better people to be in business with, healthier people. And that makes a difference in how we interact with other people. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. I think, too, that you're deciding. And certainly Sandy, mm-hmm. my husband, has been like that all his life. You're deciding to care about the other person. That becomes something that's important to you in your life.
We think about corporations as being these entities, but they're people.
Absolutely.
It's you and me that own them or work at them or buy things from them. And when we have that personal touch and our connection with the people that we work for, we work with, that makes a difference in what that corporation, that business entity is like.
I think it does make a huge difference. Yes. I think, too, that once you decide what your values are and you are willing to actually focus on them and stay with them, then I think that changes your world. It changes you.
Mm-hmm.
It changes your world, and then it changes the rest of the world. It's that pebble in the pond thing, right?
Yeah, those ripples.
All those ripples. Mm-hmm.
So in your book, you talk about 10 intentions, 10 specific intentions. And I want to go through those one at a time. So the first one you have listed is pray unceasingly. So in that mode, what are we talking about praying unceasingly? It's not 24/7 on our knees, but what is that?
Yes. In yoga,
mm-hmm.
If you're in some practices or some classes, will invite you to take an intention.
Okay.
Not always, but it's a really nice habit to get into. And if it's a really good yoga teacher, she won't direct you. She'll just say, take an intention for your practice. And any word can come up, any phrase can come up. And so...
But you're wanting a positive one.
Oh, yes. Well, yes.
And when I was in kickboxing class, my phrase is an intention would not have been the same as when I was in yoga.
So all right. Okay.
I used to name the punching bags.
Oh, why? Well, I guess getting rid of aggression
right.
could be an intention, right? But a couple of years ago, I decided in the Catholic Church, at least for the last several years, they've declared the year.
Mm-hmm.
As either the year of faith or the year of the Eucharist or the year of grace or what,
okay.
you know. And so I decided this year that this year would be the year of connecting to the divine.
Okay.
And I think we can do that whenever we stop and take a deep breath
mm-hmm.
and focus on the here and now.
Okay.
So if I can be present to the moment, present to the person, present to the experience, I feel like I'm connected to the divine and I am praying.
Okay. So it's not, you know, one of the things a lot of people are doing now is finding their prayer closet and, you know, going in their closet and isolating themselves. You're not saying isolate yourself, although that could be part of it. You're saying engage in each moment of your life.
Engage.
And serve God, your faith. Yourself, the larger world, by being in that moment.
And be aware that God is in that moment. God is in the moment. God is here with us now.
24/7, 365.
Right? I just read something else, and I'm reading The Naked Now right now by Richard Rohr, which is just really fascinating for me personally. But he reminded me again that God is always present. Mm-hmm. It is I who leave.
Right.
So
that footsteps in the sand thing.
Yes.
Poem that says, where were you when there's one set of footsteps? I was carrying you.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So God is always with us, but we forget the noise, the drive, the chores. But, there was a wonderful little book about the Amish. I don't remember the name of it right now, but it was about the Amish. And when you read the book, you realized that everything they did very deliberately because that was their prayer.
Okay.
Whether they were quilting or milking or sowing seed,
right.
Braiding their hair, washing their
bodies.
Whatever
work you did, whatever you were engaged in is in service to God at all times.
Because it was mindful.
Okay.
Not just because you were doing it.
Right.
But because you were mindful about what you were doing. And so I think that's how we stay in touch with God. If we choose to do that.
That's great. So the second one.
But I do also do formal prayers.
Yeah.
It's not just that. Yeah, go ahead.
But it's the unceasing part. You know, you pray and then, I mean, I don't, 1,000 times a day, you know, thank you, God, that car didn't hit me. Or, you know, everything. There's stuff coming at you at any particular moment. And to be aware of that in what you're doing. So the second one is one I know people struggle with, and it's forgive continually. Yourself, others, mistakes, deliberate acts, all of those kind of things, right? What we're talking about.
It's quite a challenge, isn't it? Yeah.
I think the biggest thing people have a problem with is forgiving themselves and letting go.
I don't even think they realize that. I think when in fact, this was one of our exercises. I have no idea which discussion book we were on at this point, but one of our exercises was to write down all the people that we needed to forgive. And I remember thinking, oh, for heaven's sakes, I might have one or two names in my list. You know? And then we got into the discussion and we started writing and then it was like, oh, yes. And how about this one? And how about that one?
And you were 2 years old and you remember the kid across the street and they took your toy and yeah.
And we were just having the best time. You know, we had all of these resentments, you know, that now we had to
get rid of.
Give it up. Give it up. We had to forgive. But then when it really comes down to the nitty gritty, you have all those things about yourself too, you know.
Right.
That you've you didn't get it right. You didn't make the right choice. You weren't the best at this. You didn't manage to do that. And so.
Right.
And it's just so important. Yes, I think that the two principles for my life, I think the two principles for anyone's life should be to love and to forgive.
Yes.
I think if we can focus on those two things, could you imagine what the world would be like?
Well, I mean, people want to be loved, but it's usually with conditions, right?
Yes.
I'll love you if I'm perfect and commercials. I know I spoke when I had a speaking class in college. One of the things I spoke on was the impact of ads. You open up a magazine and you know you're not tall enough, thin enough. Your hair's too short, too long. Your teeth aren't white enough. You know, there's 1,000 things that every day we see flash up in the media about what we're not. And we don't tend to celebrate what we are and accept the strengths that God gave us, the gifts, and use those the right way. If, you know, it's really hard to love a really cranky boss. And one of the books I want to write is called The New Peter Principle. So it takes the old Peter Principle says, you know, let someone basically hang themselves for their own rope, right? They get promoted too high to a position. And we all just let them fail because we know that they're not qualified. But that's not what the Apostle Peter would have done. It's not what Christ taught. We're supposed to help lift them up and help them continue to succeed no matter how they got there. And so it's that shifting around and trying to forgive somebody who's unforgivable, trying to love somebody who's unlovable. And I think that exchange in the workplace, I remember getting trained my first management job, and I had to write a performance review for one of my coworkers, and I knew the manager really liked the person. that was training me, and I didn't like the person. So I had to put on that manager's eyes, and knowing that she loved this person, she respected the person, you know, she was thrilled with her. And I had to make myself write a performance review, not from my biases or my interactions, but from how would she see that person? And that really, after that, every performance review I ever wrote made me think, okay, not just from how I'm reacting personally, not how I see things, but if I look at this objectively, you know, 360, what would someone else, and try to do it more through loving eyes, to be correcting and not tearing down.
Wow, weren't they lucky to get you?
Well, and it makes you step back, and I gotta admit, I gave a performance review to a boss that wasn't too loving one time, but you know, it's that exchange. If we love someone, we make excuses or accept the flaws. Where if we're not thrilled with that person or we don't love that person, we don't see them the same way. And if love at work, not in the way, a romantic way, but love your fellow human being, and it changes how you interact with them.
Yes, I think it changes what you say. I think it changes how you say it. But, you know, you still may not like that person.
Right. Oh, I have relatives. I have relatives I love, but, you know, but I don't like them. Right.
Yeah.
I always say I have a lot of relatives and I know a lot of people, but I don't have a lot of family and I don't have a lot of friends. Right. You're selective in that and who you let in your inner circle.
Mm-hmm.
But you're willing to help other people mm-hmm. and do it outside of that.
But I do think, back to the love, I do think that's our number one job. I think no matter what philosophy or theology you read about, healthy
right.
philosophy or theology, it's always about love.
Well, Christ said those were the two most important things. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself.
As yourself. Absolutely.
Unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people love themselves.
That you have to work on. So there you're back to creating a positive affirmation.
Right.
I mean, you can decide how you want to feel about yourself. And it can slip. Don't get me wrong. I mean, this is a meditation.
Right.
When you create an affirmation, when you create a phrase or a sentence in the present tense of how you want something to be.
It's like what? Can you give an example?
Well, how about if we do the love thing?
Okay. Right?
I am lovable. I am worthy. I do well.
Okay. Simple, to the point,
mm-hmm.
positive.
Yes. Okay. For right this second.
Mm-hmm.
And then give me 5 minutes and I might right. be interacting with someone and I might sort of slip. Or
that little recording in your head from your childhood or from school.
That says,
teacher,
can't you get it right?
Or the teacher
that... Do you
always
make mistakes? I mean, what's wrong with you?
Or the teacher that tells you you'll never amount to anything and those
no.
kind of things.
Or you don't have the intelligence.
Yeah.
You know, you can't
You need my
that.
Sixth grade teacher.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, many of us have. So, but I mean, if we take that... and we focus on it day after day after day. I know it sounds a little narcissistic, but I think most people really struggle with themselves rather than... I think when you run into somebody that seems all puffed out and taken up with themselves, I think many times that's just a false persona.
Right. They're insecure.
They're really protecting themselves.
Right.
I know that there are those people, you know, there was Steve Jobs.
Right.
You know, who really thought he could walk on water. And so there are those, and maybe he could.
Only if there were rocks under it.
unfortunately, he still couldn't not die.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're all human.
Right. And you see this, you're in the workplace. There's a dynamic of the perfect boss who doesn't want to make a mistake, who doesn't want to ask for help, who doesn't want to delegate, or, you know, the competitiveness between coworkers for that promotion or that raise, or, you know, we create all of these tensions, but if we're trying to work together toward things, I like to say we can make the pie bigger and everybody can have a bigger slice if we're working in the right way. There's not a limit on love. There's not a limit on success. Just because someone else is successful doesn't mean I can't be successful. And I don't think that's the way we're taught to think about things.
Could be. It sounds like that's something that you learned at
right.
an early age.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been talking about number three was accept and give love freely. So next it says hug whenever possible.
Oh, whenever possible. That is so much fun. I know that there are some people that do not want to be hugged.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell right away. I mean, they put their hands
right.
down next to their side. And so you have to honor that sometimes. But it's interesting because I told one of the fellas in one of my yoga classes that you needed 10 hugs a day. So this is a platonic relationship,
right?
You know, but we were talking about it and I said, you know, you're supposed to have 10 hugs a day in order to stay healthy. And so now whenever I go into yoga, he gives me a great big hug, which just feels right. When I didn't grow up in a hugging family, mm-hmm. we weren't warm, touchy-feely kind of people. And when Sandy decided to take me home to meet his family, I knew his father was a dress manufacturer mm-hmm. in Manhattan, a big name company, Adriana Papel. And I really expected his mother to be a statue. You know, I'm short and pretty short and average, but I expected his mother to be...
Don't believe her. She may be short, but she's not average.
I expected his mother to be tall and blonde or a long brunette.
You're picturing Barbie.
a model kind right. of lady, you know. And I remember getting to the house. It was a little Cape Cod mm-hmm. home on Long Island. And his mother met us at the door, threw open the door, grabbed me. She was about 4'11", grabbed me and gave me this great big hug and said, oh, I'm so excited to meet you. And I thought, oh, I've come home. You know, this is where I belonged my whole life. So so I learned that from him and from her, you know, that it just feels good to welcome people. And yeah. you could, you know, it's not only into your home, but it's into your space and into your life. And I think a lot of people need that and respond to that.
You know, different people in the family, different sides of the family, some were huggers and some weren't comfortable with that. And I can remember as a kid, I'd call them hug attacks. And I would literally walk up to somebody and say, hug attack. And, you know, we still do that now. It's like I tell my nieces, a hug attack, right? So, but yeah, that connection and that being willingness to get close to someone, like you said, they're platonic, right? But you need those connections and that feeling that, whatever chemical that releases that helps your brain and makes those connections.
Yeah, and people need to be touched. And then we know that. We know that from infants that weren't touched, you know, right. years and years ago when they did all that research. And the elderly now, they don't get hugged. When I was with my mom in the assisted living, I did notice that the people who worked at Woodland Terrace would bend over, put an arm around someone, pat somebody on the hand, you know, things like that. So it's just an important part of being healthy.
Well, and I think so much we've become conscious of sexual harassment, workplace type things, and just those whole dimensions of, and people have become very careful to be, let's call it politically correct, so that they're not stepping in the wrong way and something's not taken the wrong way. And I think we lose a lot from that.
I think you're right.
And yeah. that personal connection.
Right.
So number 5. I love this one because this is me. Learn continually.
Oh, isn't it wonderful to keep growing?
I mean, there's always something to engage in. It makes your mind. It's fun. It changes your perspectives. And you're talking about learning from your peers, your friends, these study groups, from books. It's formal education. It's informal. It's everything. And it just gives a power to things.
Yeah, it helps those neurotransmitters stay plugged in and working, right, and growing. And wasn't that one of the biggest discoveries of the 20th century was that the adult brain can still change and grow?
Yeah, we're not defined as too limited. We can
right.
keep adding capacity and connections.
Right, yes. And sometimes I think it would be easy just not to do that. Just easy, so I can take a break once in a while. But
in this world, we're learning, and a lot of times it's not by choice. We have all this advances in technology, all the information.
I think it's always by choice.
Yeah. Well, yeah, to some extent, you're
right.
It's always by choice. But if you want to engage in school, I'm doing a distance learning program. You have to be really good at the new software and engaging.
And
it's like you make one choice and it leads to you to learn something else you wouldn't expect.
Because you're doing that.
Right.
Because you chose to do that. I think in my book I talk about one of the women that moved to an independent living program. And she was deciding who she was going to spend her time with.
Mm-hmm.
And especially during meals. And so she went around from person to person, and she would say to them, so what'd you do today? well, what did you learn today? Or what was exciting today? And if they just said, oh, nothing, she did not eat with those people.
Well, that's an important point because it's who you surround you with is who, how your life becomes.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's one of my affirmations, too. Back to love, though. Mm-hmm. You know, I have that, you know, I am surrounded by love at all times. And I believe that. And sometimes, and the really wonderful part about that is, you know how sometimes we can get caught up in other people's lives, mm-hmm. and we can think, oh, they have more money, or they're skinnier, or they've got more friends, or they're doing more exciting things.
Yeah, right.
You know, all the things. You know, they have this successful job. And then I have to stop and I have to say, and my affirmation that my life is filled with love at all times is like, what more could I possibly want?
Right.
I mean, how can I be envious of anybody else when I really feel, mm-hmm. you know, that I'm leading this blessed life that has just all these wonderful, loving people that I've surrounded myself with.
Well, I know I was at a speaking engagement I did over in Winston-Salem. And in the talk, we were talking about, you know, how people get caught up in worrying about what other people think or whatever people are doing. And I said, you know, people really aren't paying that much attention to you.
Oh, that's the truth. I think it's actually right there. If they're paying attention to you at all.
Right. Because it's like they're, you know, it might be a passing thought if you're driving a new, you know, expensive car, or you get a new house, or you get a promotion. But in that instant, it passes through their mind and they're on to worrying about what they're going to do next or what they're focused on or something that's going on in their lives. And it's a milestone. And yeah, we can have that moment of envy or whatever. But overall, I don't think most people spend a lot of time focused on what other people are getting and doing. Or if they do, they're taking a lot of their time away from what they could be achieving.
I think we still have that keeping up with the Joneses mentality. A lot of people do. I think it's really important if we can step back and look at our lives, and just like the experience with cancer, mm-hmm. I think it's important to take that time to decide what your life is like and if it's the way you want it to be. And if it isn't, I don't think it has to be because you're comparing yourself to somebody else, but it just isn't what you had hoped for, dreamed about. And maybe it's time for you to change that and, you know, change.
Make a different choice.
And make a different choice in what you're saying to yourself.
Yeah. A lot of times we make those choices and we don't even realize where that path's going to lead us.
I agree.
Sometimes it's a good path, and sometimes it's a learning path, and sometimes it's a path that we need to step back and say, okay, no, I make the choice now to get off that path.
Absolutely. Yes. We talked about that in my discussion group the other day about we had to list, we're doing Finding Your North Star by Brené Brown right now.
Okay.
And so we had to find the South Star, I guess. We had to find that scenario in our lives that if everything was absolutely the worst possible thing, that would be the opposite direction that we would want to go. And so she wanted you to write that out and actually to feel what that was like. You know, you're with people you don't like. You're in a situation where you can't remember anything that you need to remember. I mean, just, you know, it's just, you're nervous, you're not feeling well, you've got a stomach ache. I mean, the whole thing.
Take it to the max. Everything that could be going wrong. Yeah,
yes.
That's right.
And where was I going with that? And you asked me about...
To go to the North Star. You were pitched about finding your North Star.
Yes, but it was it remembering?
Making your choice, getting a new path.
We had to pick out our worst mistake ever. A worst life mistake ever. And we actually had to list three of them. And I mean, I had like, I drove the car out of the garage with the hatch up. I mean, that was not too long ago, so it was primarily in my mind. But when we really started looking back on our lives.
Right.
And
your
choices.
Your worst choice. Your worst mistake. Wow.
Yes. And it was scary. And yet...
you're here. You're happy. You're loved.
Well, and again, sometimes it was you were faced with that choice, but because of your value system, you didn't make that choice. So it was just an interesting exercise.
I'll have to do that when I get home, because that raises questions, but I'm trying to think, what would I pick? So, all right, number six, dance often. You mean literally, physically dance.
Yes, dance often. Turn the music on, let go, let it go through your body. I think there's something very healing about dancing. I don't know if that's true for everyone, but I haven't met many people that when the music, something in that music has you just sort of shifting, you know,
right.
It can be whatever kind of music turns you on.
I think Kathy Mattea had a song that says, dance like no one's watching.
Dance like no one's watching.
Yeah.
Yes.
And just let go.
Yes, there is just a joy in that. So, I know in my book, I talk about T.J. Martin. She's one of our yoga teachers at the yoga retreat every year. And she studied yoga dance.
Okay.
And so on Saturday nights, we always have a yoga dance session. And the women all come, and now they'll bring their coin skirts and their...
Wow. You know, yeah, so you can hear it, yeah.
Oh, you can hear it. And we share them. And TJ brings boas, and she brings mesh. And I've just seen miracles happen. I mean, these...
It gets you back to that joy you have when you're a kid, and you just cut loose and do whatever you want, and don't worry about what he thinks or what's right.
And
or,
it's so safe. Yeah. Nobody really... I mean, it's all women.
Yeah.
So nobody really cares. There's nobody else... no one is watching.
It's like no one's watching it.
But I've just seen... we had one woman once that wasn't participating in anything. She had a really tough time, and she was really struggling, and she was just totally withdrawn. And TJ works you through the chakras.
Okay,
so
great.
You start at the first chakra, and I don't know if we're up to the third or the fourth chakra, or whatever we were up to with the kind of music that she had chosen. And this woman, I think it was Sly and the Family Stones or one of
right.
the... This woman, it was like... Someone just jolted her body. All of a sudden, you know, she just came alive. I mean, she started dancing, and she was sweating, and she was going up to everybody, and she was having the best time. And from that moment on, I could see that she was feeling better. So
yeah.
I just think it's probably dancing, you know.
Express yourself. Let that everything out.
Mm-hmm.
Number seven, eat mindfully.
Yes, live mindfully. I think that's what we're talking about here. Yeah. What are your choices? How do they make you feel?
Do they make you healthier? Do they make you sicker? Do they support your goals, your other choices?
Are you eating too much? Are you eating too often? I think we can do that. That doesn't mean to deny yourself. It just means to be aware of what your choices are.
Recognize the shadows. What do you mean by that?
Oh, well, I think that we all have those little bits in us or some larger parts of us that we don't feel really good about.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we don't even understand what they are. And I think if we maintain a sense of awareness, we might just discover what that is. And by discovering it, I think we can be healthier. So I'll give you a personal example.
Okay.
All right. So once again, I was at a workshop or something. I think it was the Not So Big Life workshop.
Okay.
And she had us go through this piece of paper and circle all the things we say to ourselves. And then based on what we say to ourselves, she put us in different groups. It was a very uncomfortable situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when we started going through all the negative things, you know, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe people say this to themselves. And I'm like, just going through the whole list, you know. And we finally get over towards the end of the second column, and someplace down in the corner, it's, I know how to do this. Things you say to yourself,
right.
There goes the circle right around.
Right.
I know how to do this. I can do this better. Oh, there goes the circle. A circle again, you know. I know the right way. I'm circling that too, you know. And I'm thinking, okay, where is this going?
Right.
Well, that was like discovering a shadow. I mean, who wants to be with somebody who always knows better, who always knows the right way, who always can tell you how to do something?
Right.
You know, and I thought, ooh, that's not, I mean, I may, so that may be okay to say it to myself, but I have to be aware that not everybody wants to do it my way.
Right.
My way isn't always the right way. So there was my shadow. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, I can relate that back to business things where you give someone an assignment and you have or your boss is giving you the assignment and he tells you the 3,000 steps he wants you to take to do it, right? It has to look a certain way, go through these steps. And you look down at it and think, well, I can do this in 10 steps instead of 3,000. But he knows it should be this way. It's his way, those kind of things. And so carrying those shadows, you know, into your personal life, into your work life can impact how people see you, want to work with you or not work with you.
Well, I think it's just being more aware of who you are and what's driving you. I think another shadow that I discovered was that many of my choices were based on if they made me feel safe.
Mm, okay.
And so again, back to the foods, being a cancer survivor. Is this a good food to eat? Is this a bad food to eat? Is this okay to eat? You know, but even little things, locking the car doors, making sure I get my exercise in every day. I'm trying to stay alive and stay healthy. I am trying to feel as safe as I possibly can, even in my relationships. If I'm in a relationship, I've been in work situations with people where I felt threatened,
mm-hmm.
Maybe not physically, but emotionally,
yeah.
I couldn't function. I mean, it didn't serve any purpose for me to be there. So I just had to recognize that that seems very important to me.
And I probably have the flip side. I was always the one that was afraid to always do the safe thing.
Oh.
Right? And so if I felt too comfortable, too safe, things were too routine, I needed to change it, which is why I moved about every 8 months. Fortunately, I had companies that would move me, and they were career moves. But, you know, being settled, doing this, and to this day, I'll admit, I can't stand doing the same thing every day, same time of a day, in that kind of a routine. It just, I'm not wired that way. But you can see those patterns of running. Like I said earlier, you run from something rather than to something.
Right.
Run from routine, run from, you know, doing the same thing every day. Too.
And if you don't recognize it, you won't make any changes.
Right.
You know. So, and I think that's what we're, again, that's what we're talking about here, being aware, being conscious, you know, making intentional choices.
Mm-hmm. Smile early, laugh daily. Yeah. I have never seen you without a smile.
Oh, well, maybe you just bring it out of me.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's always wonderful to sit and talk to you, Lee. Well, let's face it. I don't know about you, but some mornings I wake up and a smile is not exactly what I feel like doing.
I'm not a morning person, so I would say that's most days.
Okay.
But, right, yeah.
I'm either a little too tired, or I've had some really bad dreams, or I have a day that's just really hectic or stressful or mm-hmm. whatever. But I have discovered that if you can smile, your body doesn't know that you're tired. Your body doesn't know that it's achy. I mean, it just changes everything.
What?
And laughter. Well, let's face it. Who was it? Norman Cousins.
Laughter is the best medicine.
Laughter is the best medicine when he was so deathly ill and he decided he was going to watch the Three Stooges and laugh all the time. And there's just something.
That would have killed me.
And I'm so aware of it. By writing that out, I'm so aware of when I'm in a situation that causes me to laugh. Or when I'm with a group of people and there's a lot of laughing, and I think, oh, this is a gift.
Well, and it's, you know, in sales, they tell you, you're making cold calls or whatever, to have a mirror in front of you, make sure you're smiling because it comes through in your voice, right? And that's somewhat of what you're saying is, well, I'm a migraine sufferer, but when I step out of my house, it doesn't matter how bad the migraine is, a smile's going to go on, and I'm going to do my utmost that no one knows if I'm tired, if I feel bad. And those kind of things, because the smile does help you put it off, put it in a different part of your mind.
Well, and we actually talked about this at one of our yoga meetings, just I think it was last time, about the fact that there's something to do with when you turn your mouth up,
mm-hmm.
it releases endorphins.
takes less muscles to make you smile than it does to frown, and it signals your brain something.
And haven't you seen people that they've been frowning their whole lives? I mean, their whole mouth just turns down, and they look mean and ugly, and I don't want to go near them. I feel myself backing up.
But it's, I remember when I was doing my migraines, and one of my doctors told me, was like, it's bad for you to smile every day. Don't smile. I said, I would scare people if I didn't, if I wasn't smiling when I went. I said, when I feel really bad, they're like, oh no, that was, and I was like, and one day it was storming. I had the migraine from where. And I had to have something done on my car, and it was the place I always had my car worked on. And I went down there, and I walked in, the manager of the place, he goes, I don't know what we did, but we'll fix it. And I started laughing, because I was like, no, I just have a headache. He's like, are you sure? I was like, yeah. I mean, I hadn't even been there with the car yet. I was just dropping the car off, and it was just like I said, yeah. You know, that smile, that didn't make me laugh, but it was like, okay, it is important, that face you present to yourself, to the world, to put the smile on.
I know it's a power trip, but I have found that you can engage even the grumpiest person so many times with a smile, with a kind word, with a question about how they are. And you can see that there's just a change in their demeanor, and it always is a rewarding experience for me.
Well, you go through the mall or driving down on the interstate, and if you look over, I'll say 99% of the people in the car are frowning. They're not rocking out to the music. They're not smiling. They're just in this zone of, and you think, well, I'm going to smile sitting in my car, right? You don't want to be in that unhappy mode.
No, but it's also so important. I had read something just recently, and I don't know which book it was in, but about how we engage with all the service people that we have in our lives. I mean, I always think of them as my support people. Mm-hmm. So part of my morning prayers is to offer it up for all the support people in my life. I say seen and unseen, now, here, and in the future, and for their families. Because what would my life be without these support people? And for example, the people who make our clothes,
right,
or grow our food. I mean, there's just a zillion of them.
But the garbage man.
But also those people that, we see on a day, like the woman that helped me check out of the grocery store this morning. Nancy was her name. I like to notice who they are.
Right. I do.
I like to ask them how their day is going.
Make eye contact.
I like to make eye contact. I just like to let them know that I recognize that they're there, that they're doing a good job, that they're working hard. I'm not in the grocery store standing on my feet. Nancy looked like she was about 75 or 80 years old, and she's still in the grocery store standing on her feet.
I'm particularly conscious of the wait staff at restaurants. And so it's like, trying to get the orders, rushing around. People are always in a hurry to get this. And again, know their name. And I think, thank you, that's something that's necessary. We need it. We're out there. And that's the one job I've never done in my life.
Oh, I've never been a waitress either. Well, so, yeah. Except at home.
Right. Well, yeah. I think we're all at home or at a church event or something like that. But the challenges of that, of memory, remembering customers, what did they just order? And I especially admire the places where they don't get to use a notepad. They come up and they take your order and they're supposed to remember everything. And I'm high maintenance now, ordering with gluten issues and all that stuff. So it's, and I now have typed up my own little card of all the things that can be. Then I just hand them the card and, that makes their day. They can just take it back with them and then bring it back. So I have these thousands of these little laminated cards that say, okay, nothing of this in here. Right. And it makes their life easier.
Oh, I'd love to see that card.
Oh, I've got them with me.
Okay. My daughter-in-law is gluten-free. And so she just started that for some stomach issues.
Right.
I think she'd really, that's funny too, because Joey, my son, my adult son, we went to a restaurant one day and I was ordering very specifically because I eat intentionally, or at least I try to. And he said to me, for heaven's sakes, Mom, why don't you just make up your own menu? You can carry it with you. And you can say, which of these can you serve to me?
That when you think of it from a business perspective, the better we can communicate, the less issues the restaurant has, the less, issues and stuff. And so it's just like, somebody, why did you do it? I said, well, one, because I'm kind of a control freak. And it's like, so it's just, it was just easier than trying to explain every time I go in, there's these seven things I can't have in my meal, and make sure that they understand what those are, and then take it back to the chef. Cause you know, and then, you know, no soy, which is very hard to avoid things, you know, and they say, well, can you go back and read the side of your vegetable oil bottle? Cause 90% of them now are contain soy. And so it's like, then they come out and it's like, well, do you have olive oil anywhere? And you know, and you start this conversation. And if they can't do it, that's fine, right? I was like, that's fine. Just bring me a glass of water and everybody else will eat and I'll get something later. Or carry the food in, you know, to lunch meetings and stuff like that. But it's that difference of even, I mean, I was at a restaurant the other day and no matter how many times we did it, give them the card, the meal kept coming back wrong, right? And it was just a, you know, and I wasn't upset with the manager. I said, no, you know, it's, everybody's going to have to learn as more and more people develop food allergies, and it's a business thing to communicate those. I wasn't been out of shape, but I couldn't eat the food they were producing. So it's just one of those dynamics as being connected to ourselves, those intentional choices. Would the eating it kill me? No, it would just make me wish I had died from eating it. But, you know, some people don't have that option. My peanut allergy will not immediately kill me at this point. It's not that bad. But who knows when that'll switch that it's, you know, a critical issue. And there are so many people that have that. And it's just those kind of intentional choices and communicating them. But I would not want to be, I mean, I have the utmost admiration for anybody that can do the restaurants, wait on the tables and do that. Cause that's just that. And working with senior citizens, the people at the Senior Citizen Center, I tell them they deserve Purple Hearts a lot of times.
Oh, I hope they get, the women who helped me when my mom was in assisted living and she was dying, they should go straight to heaven.
Yeah.
I mean, they right through the pearly gates. That, you know, I mean, they just
take special people.
Yes. Yes, they were really kind and compassionate, and not only to her but to the family too. So
yeah, I mean, it's really people who love and serve.
So I agree with you. I think that all of the service people and I can't remember which book I was reading this in, but anyhow, when she talked about you know, people that go in and are just talking on the phone and they don't put the phone down I mean, this person is serving them or they're, you know, it's just so rude. It's like they're not even there.
We were traveling. My cousin died a few weeks ago. I was driving my mother back for the funeral and I was sitting outside of the McDonald's. We'd stopped for a break and I looked in and it was a Saturday morning and you could see this father and his daughter there and they had been in line behind us and she looked like she's probably 6 or 7 and he was on the phone in the line. He did put the phone down when he ordered, got back to the table. I thought, you know, I'm sitting there probably 30 minutes in the car while we're taking a break watching it, and at no point did he ever put the phone down. And I thought, what's he doing? What's that choice? What does that say to that child? What does it say when you're in a meeting, and I've been in business meetings, and the phone rings and everybody just keeps answering the phone or they're texting? They're not in the moment. You're not accomplishing anything. You're not engaging.
That's a whole other hour, I think.
Yeah, I think it is, too.
There was the cartoon WALL-E.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember, when they got to the spaceship, everybody had screens that floated in front of them, and they only talked to the screens. They didn't even realize there were people to their left or their right. And the other night, Sandy and I went to dinner at a restaurant, and there was a bar. We were sitting at the bar, and across the bar was open, and there were three people sitting there together, and they were all looking at their phones. Never did they put the...
They were together, right?
I knew they were together, yeah. But never did they put the phone down. They were just looking at their phone, and I thought, WALL-E?
Well, and we do that. We don't think, you know, I'm just going to do this one little thing, or, you know, that multitasking. Somebody was pointing out last week when I was at the business, you know, I was multitasking because I was sitting or working on my next book. I was promoting the book. I was doing all this stuff. He goes, you women can multitask. And I was like, yeah. He says, I do one thing at a time. I said, well, I will multitask, but only within a certain parameter, because I have to give the right consciousness to each thing I'm doing. And so, you know, I had three things going, but I was only doing one thing at a time.
Right.
And I was doing that. So when somebody came into the booth, who are you? What are you doing? Are you enjoying the event? You know, all that kind of stuff. And engage one-on-one to do that and make that connection. And I think that's important in our personal lives, our businesses, that if we can't see each person, we're not going to see anybody.
It's probably one of the most important things, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
To just, and again, you know, to be in the moment, and especially if there's a person there, to be in the moment and to be with that person and not be doing a lot of other things. I find it, I try not to judge, but I almost find it offensive when people are have to pick up the phone to talk to somebody else or are looking at the phone if I'm sitting there and not talking to me. It's like, hey.
Well, the worst I ever had was a business meeting, and the guy had 3 cell phones.
Oh.
And he had, and it was, and he had the earpieces, one on each ear for each one. And he, the entire meeting, he was running all those phones. And I thought, why don't I just leave you here for lunch by yourself? Because it was the same effect. Take this call, take that call. And I'm like, what was the point of having a lunch meeting? We didn't talk about anything, but I got to watch him answer 3 phones all through lunch. And I'm not sure what he had intended to accomplish with that. But, you know, we just get caught up in, I guess, the moment, the tasks, everything we're trying to juggle, and we forget to make that choice to be right there with that person right at that time.
Yes.
But that guy didn't get my business.
Oh, I'm glad.
So, yeah.
I'm glad that worked out for you.
So the last thing.
Yeah.
Be grateful. It says for always and for all things.
All things.
The good, the bad, the ups, the downs.
Well, part of the yoga
is
not to judge. Not easy, huh?
Mm-mm.
We want to put a label on everything, right?
Right.
Black, white, up, down, good, bad, in, out. But things aren't really like that. And especially in terms of the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many wonderful parables about thinking something was horrible and then finding out down the road that it was really something that was for your benefit.
Right.
You know? But being grateful for all things at all times, no matter what. Thank you, God. Thank you, God, for this. Thank you.
That old song, "Thank God for Unanswered Prayers."
Oh yeah, I love that one. Yeah, yeah, he's singing about a woman that he didn't marry.
We probably thought a lot of us would probably sing that song.
Yeah, that's someone else is marrying. Yeah. Thank God for unanswered prayer. But that's a life lesson,
right?
And that's something that is the work of a lifetime, to be grateful for all things. Yes, just recently I had someone who was having, she said, oh no, I say thank you for this and thank you for that. And I, you know, I see all the blessings in my life, but she was struggling with an issue, a personal issue that was really pretty daunting.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her if she was grateful for that.
Yeah.
And there was dead silence. And she said, I don't know. I don't think I can do that. And I said, well, when you can do that,
right,
then it'll be okay. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being on the show today. Give everyone the title of your book and where they can get it.
Creating Positive Affirmations, Living an Intentional Life. And you can buy it on any of the major book sites, or you can buy it from the publisher, which is Author House.
That's authorhouse.com, and we'll put the information on the website so
thank
everyone
you.
Can get it. Thanks for being with us. And until next week, everyone, stay focused on the important things.